Podcast, and welcome back to Retrona, the show where we sequentially study the rise and fall of TNA Impact on Spike TV, taking us from late 2005 to late 2015, as we try and chronicle and study the one-time rival to the WWE and try and pinpoint the exact moment it all went wrong. My partner in crime, as always, for this journey is none other than Michael Farah. Michael, how's it going?
Doing good. Genesis is an interesting show. It's a very interesting show in that there are some things on here that are phenomenal. There are some very, very odd booking decisions. And it is a mixed bag, but overall I think it's one of the better shows that we've watched.
100%. I think at this point the Russo and Cornette effects can end full swing. But without the true level of disaster. But if this is your first time on Retrona, before we hop in with the show discussion, we like to look a little bit at what's been happening around the world in wrestling at this sort of time, which would be November 2006. And then we kind of just talk anything about any major changes since the last time we talked, which would have been last Tuesday, for Bound for Glory. So, Michael, I believe it's been quite a quiet news month, only the three pay-per-views across all major promotions, but did you manage to find anything interesting for November 2006?
Look, there is not a lot happening in November of 2006. The little tidbits of information that I could see is that it was announced that Ashley Massaro was going to be posing for Playboy the following year. A young upstart by the name of Claudio Cascanoli was offered a developmental contract, who would go on to be Cesaro. So that's in the process there, but that's literally all I've got for tidbits, because there were two WWE pay-per-views.
Cyber Sunday was this month, right?
Yes, right at the start of the month, November 5th.
I believe I watched Cyber Sunday live. I have a very strong mental recollection of this pay-per-view. Not that it's good.
No, it's not that great at all. The more notable matches were Rated RKO versus DX with Eric Bischoff as referee. You had Lita defeating Mickie James to win the vacant women's title. And then had Booker...
Sorry? Is it a Divas Lumberjack match? Or
Lumberjill match, yeah.
Because I think the options were that, no disqualification, and...
Submission,
yes. And it was really close between people who wanted to see the two really good women wrestle and the two who wanted to go, haha, women.
It was like submission no one wanted to see. No disqualification was only 6% behind or something, Lumberjill. So I wonder what the no disqualification would have been like. Oh well.
3 minutes but long. Yes.
No, I think they ended up getting about 10 minutes for that match, so that's not terrible for a women's match in 2006.
Fair.
And the main event was Booker T defeating Cena versus Show, and the stipulation was the fans got to choose which title was on the line, because they each had the WWE World Heavyweight and ECW titles at the time. So Booker T ended up getting having his title because he was the biggest heel in the match. He retained because of Kevin Federline.
I was going to say, this is Keyfed time, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it really is. But that was Cyber Sunday. Not much happening there. At Survivor Series, which is at the end of the month, which is a week after Genesis, there was the 5-on-5 Survivor Series match that was DX, the Hardys, and CM Punk's team doing a shutout on like Team Rated RKO. Which was like Nitro, Orton, Edge, Mike Knox, and
probably Carlito. It was 2006. Probably
like
Carlito.
Yeah. Lita lost the women's title to Mickie James and subsequently retired. That was that's probably the biggest thing from Survivor Series, and Batista regained the world title, but Lita is retired at this point in, and I'm not saying this because I love her, the worst retirement in the history of wrestling. And I count that as like Edge's original retirement and that sort of stuff. It was horrendous.
You can't even insult the people involved in it anymore.
No, you can't. But like, you certainly can insult the people who wrote that and made that a thing. If anyone hasn't seen it, don't watch it. But it's basically Crime Time coming out and doing a wholesale in which they give out Lita's underwear and yeast infection medicine and a vibrator and stuff. It was very bad. And it's what's worse about it is the fact that Lita went around and had multiple meetings with Vince McMahon that day and say, please don't do this. Can we please, like, let me put Mickey over. Let me do all of that. Let me cut the whiny promo at the end. Please don't do this wholesale thing at the end. And he wouldn't budge.
Such good shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and then
you just don't get it, Lita. You don't get it. It's money. Big money.
And then after that, Lita didn't really do anything in wrestling for a good number of years after that. And I can't imagine why. but that was it for November 2006. There's really not a hell of a lot going on.
Yeah, it's kind of that in-between period of, you know, winding up for the year before the sort of the madness of January and the Rumble and New Year's Revolution.
But no, next month is gonna be lots of information. I'm going to need to set aside a good portion of the show to get through December 2006.
Benoit's not December 2006, is he?
No, but it's the ECW December to Dismember thing.
Oh my god, it is. I can't remember how me and Innes got to talking about it, and he was like, I wonder if it's actually that bad. I was like, Innes, it's the single worst thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, off the top of my head, there's a genuinely quite enjoyable match between the Hardys and Eminem.
Yes, that was very good.
Then there's Mike Knox and Kelly Kelly versus probably Ariel and Kevin Thorne. I'm pretty sure that the story for that was Mike Knox wanted to date Kelly Kelly, but she was the stripper girl, so he was trying to keep her covered up. Just wait till he finds out about OnlyFans in 2020.
Oh my goodness. yeah, and then there's so much terrible stuff on there, like Greg Carly versus Tommy Dreamer, and there's Balls Mahoney versus Matt Stryker, I want to say.
Matt Stryker, yeah. Because Matt Stryker gets stripped to his underwear. And then... they have CM Punk in a chamber match, and the story is Bobby Lashley, Big Show. Oh, God, I'm looking forward to next week.
Again, more details next week, so look forward to that.
But because December 2006, a lot happens in terms of the other places in wrestling, I thought that what we'd do before we get into Genesis is we talk a little bit about some stuff that we're leaving behind in 2006. Now, we've got 1 month left, of course. We've got Turning Point? Breaking Point.
Turning Point.
We got Turning Point. So, and then first pay-per-view of 2007 is Final Revolution. So, you know, I thought rather than do it on the last episode, we're going to have a lot to talk about, because TNA will be doing their own end-of-year awards, I'm sure, that AJ Styles will win and things like that. I figured we'd talk about the wrestlers that have been released / left TNA in 2006 that have been there for, like actual wrestlers as opposed to, like, people that were brought in for short terms.
Yeah.
And then I had a little look at wrestlers who wrestled for TNA in 2006 that we missed out on because we're not reviewing week-to-week television.
Because we are not insane.
Yes. So we'll kick things off with the wrestlers that have left us so far in 2006. So you get some smaller names here. And by smaller, I mean microscopic. You know, we've got fond memories of Apollo Machete.
Oh, yes, yes. Glad they did not eventuate to anything.
We have got literally three people that I had never heard of. Jarrell Clark, Craig Classic.
Oh, I heard that name.
And Joseph Doering, who's the one that's actually pasted in this Discord chat, who looks incredibly like Heidenreich, but isn't Heidenreich. they all came and went in 2006. Larry Zbyszko is gone, but he will certainly never be forgotten.
That was a long start to Retrona, the Larry Zbyszko story. I'm glad that is over with.
It encaptures our first year of Retrona, that's for sure. Roderick Strong is gone. For now. Some of these people might return, but not for a while. Shannon Moore, gone.
He'll be back in 2010.
Yep. Who else have we got? Sabu, gone. Monty Brown, gone. X-Pac, gone. Jeff Hardy, gone. As well as Shocker, but I wasn't sure if I wanted to count Shocker.
Yeah. It's there are some very notable names in there that were instrumental in the early part of TNA, but now I feel like none of those names are missing, with the exception of Jeff Hardy
and Monty Brown.
Yeah, there you go. There's no one's really missing from the show.
Yeah, they are it's almost very clearly good business from TNA for the most part. You look to the right, Machete, and Machete was dreadful, so they cut him, replaced him with Homicide. Great choice. Interestingly, we are 1 month away, so December 2006 is Final Battle, ROH's pay-per-view, where Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, finally drops the newly unified ROH world title to Homicide. So it'll be interesting to see if he maybe rocks up with that at a pay-per-view. I doubt it, but it'll be interesting to see. But yeah, Machete going makes sense. Apollo was a behaviour issue, so that makes sense. Moody, Jarrell Clark, Craig Classic, and Joseph Doering, they didn't use and I've never heard of, so I'm going to say that was good choices. Zbyszko ran his course. Sabu, Monty Brown, Jeff Hardy, they chose to leave, but they were replaceable. And X-Pac is X-Pac, so you know, it was fine. But I have generated for you, Michael, the top five wrestlers we missed out on. These wrestlers might have had as little as a 1 minute squash match appearance on a TV taping of Impact, but they were all there. I've done it in how bad it would be to watch. In number five, genuinely would have been quite interesting to see. It's none other than Mr. I Love Independent Wrestling and the WWE himself, Seth Rollins. He appeared in a squash match. Unsurprisingly, he was on the receiving end of the squash.
Yes.
For as wrong
Tyler
killings.
As Tyler Beth, as Tyler Black, I assume.
Yeah, as yeah. Tyler Black. He lost to Ron Killings in about a minute, which is fun to think about in 2020.
It's a bit odd today, isn't it?
Number four is someone I feel like Tyler Black shares a lot of similarities with. It's Jimmy Jacobs. Punk Rock Princess would go back to Impact after getting fired from WWE for that infamous Bullet Club photo to work with the terrifying monster. I can't remember his name. Number three is Kenny King. K-I-N-G King.
Oh, yes.
ROH, like, long timer, very, like, bit of a dick, but really good at the wrestling. Number two, it's Mr. Simon Gotch, under a weird name like Jack Strago or something like that. He was in a 1 minute squash match. I'll let you decide what side of that squash he was on. And number one, the most disappointing wrestler that we missed out on, you know, Mr. Wrestling Observer, Mr. Five Star Match, Mr. WrestleMania, it's Violent J, but more specifically, all of the Insane Clown Posse.
Are you serious?
They did an episode of Impact where the three of them were there and they had a match against, I think it was the James Gang.
Lord.
Which sounds like hell. Like can we
definitely not watch that ever?
Like, I remember watching a respective on the ICP and wrestling recently, and like, especially Violent J getting some credit for like actually going out and making the effort to get trained and like not being dreadful, but at the same time it is still the Insane Clown Posse, you know?
Yeah.
This one's for my chickalos and chickalettes. Whoop whoop. Is their real achievement to wrestling. It's a Twitter account. But yeah, I was having a look. There was a couple other people. No one really of note. Like, Jacqueline was in TNA at some point in 2006.
Jacqueline's coming in, like, very soon.
Yeah, which is strange given that she's coming probably in 2 months' time. I think she kind of comes
like
as America's Most Wanted split. Deborah was there.
Deborah?
Yeah.
Huh. Oh, I didn't realize that.
I couldn't find context for it, but she was there. Same with Sherry Martel.
Oh, yes, I do remember here. I think that, like, she made, like, some sort of, like, accompanied someone to the ring or something like that, and it was, like, I think that was her last televised appearance before she died.
Oh, yeah, I forget she's dead. Must have been TNA that did it. Yeah.
The lengths people will go to get out of TNA.
But, yeah. You just should have just done what Tessa did. Be a racist. But yeah, that's kind of the roundup. I figured it'd be nice to do this November every year. Look at who we've lost. Look at who we missed out on. And with that, I really don't want to jump into Genesis because I know what's up first, but let's be like a white Christian woman in a suburban American neighborhood. Let's talk about Genesis.
I was legitimately not sure where that sentence was going to end up. And I'm actually relieved it wasn't that bad.
No, it was just a cheesy segue. Nothing racist, homophobic or offensive about it in general. unlike Wally. But we or Wily, sorry. We kick things off and we get the usual really good TNA opening package. This one, I've got to say, was weaker than usual. You know, you get the epic music, you get the hype up, you get the recap of everything. Yeah. And usually these are really good for like being like, oh, this is going to be really good. I don't know if it's the fact that I finished the night shift at 7, got home at 7:30 and had a coffee and then started watching it. Or if it was the fact that it was just slightly calmer than the madness of the Bound for Glory one. But, you know, it didn't have the same effect this time.
The voiceover like does its best.
Yeah.
But yeah, it doesn't really feel like it. Really feels like this pay per view is Angle versus Joe. Like it's a one match selling point, and it's a good one match selling point. So go yeah. all out on it, absolutely. But that's all we're here for.
So, Don West and Mike Tenay welcome us to the show. Explain we're gonna get under action. Straight away with tag team action as the new movement, the team of Johnny Devine, Kazarian, and Matt, before they were revealed to be Kaz, Havoc, and Martyr as part of Serotonin.
Mm-hmm.
They are taking on the new leaders of the war. They laid down the gauntlet. It's the VKM, the Voodoo Kin Mafia, the worst group of individuals in the history of the world, and I include every possible offensive group you can think of. they legit air a recap, which includes a promo where they call out Vincent Kennedy McMahon by name, mm-hmm. And say that they're going to war. They then, at the start of the promo, and throughout, in fact, just say WWE, which they usually walk around ever so slightly. Mm. Whereas here it's like, it's AEW levels of it.
Yeah, it's really, yeah. It's, I hate that the Voodoo Kin Mafia is here. Like, I hated the James Gang, but like, this is exponentially worse.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you thought a new name and a bit more edginess was going to make them better, God, you were wrong. It's, I've never wanted someone to be in a car crash more than those two. I stand by what I said on Twitter. Road Dogg's a dick, so I don't expect anything from him, but from all accounts, I've heard that Billy Gunn is really nice. So I would like Billy Gunn to publicly apologise for the Voodoo Kin Mafia being on my television.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting cameo request if he's on it. Hi, can you please apologise for your role in the Voodoo Kin Mafia?
I think Billy Gunn's on the cameo. I'm not sure. I'm not.
Probably like
$200. Don't have the energy to check. Yeah, so this is a handicap match. It's 3-on-2. Mm-hmm. And Voodoo Kin Mafia just win, like, really quickly. Like, we're talking under 4 minutes quickly. And it's bad. It's very bad. It's like Billy Gunn does the, sorry, Kip James does the pedigree and then tunes up badly. Yeah, very badly. Tunes up the band for Sweet Tune Music, but doesn't hit it. It's all, and then like after they win, they then cut a promo on Vince, Paul Levesque, and Michael Hickenbottom.
Do you get it, guys? Because that's their shoot name. Pew pew pew. Oh, so cool! Look, hey, Insider Bros. It's like Jericho doing like the insidery promos he's doing for AEW at the moment, but without the sort of little bit of irony. Like
exactly. Yeah,
when Jericho did the promo about the demos. Like, I could tell that it was him half mocking his own fans as well. And just like, oh, the demos, and half mocking Tony Khan as well. Like, it was clearly ironic, but with a twist of, like, actually proving the point. This just felt so fucking cheesy.
It's so forced. It's so, like, and, like, I think back, like, you think back to 2006 and, like, the crowd, for whatever reason, are responding to it because, I guess, you weren't, like, it had been, what, six or seven years since, like, they're, like, you know, WCW went out of business 5 years before this, but, like, they had that, like, they weren't actually competition for
last few,
so it's been, like, 7 years or so since there's been, like, proper competition between another brand, and to have them, like, calling out these people and calling out Vince and all these different things, and it's just, like, ugh. I'm sure people, for whatever reason, responded to it at the time, because it didn't happen that often at the time, but you try and do this today, and you just get thrown in the trash for it, basically.
Pretty much. And given that we know that they go back to WWE for a bit, and then they do other stuff related with them, like, retrospectively, it's even cheesier.
I bet Vince was surprised to learn he was in a war. It's kind of like a mosquito or something that bites you and stuff. You don't find out until after the fact.
Yes. After the promo, we see Matt Bentley and Kazarian bring Johnny Devine back out, but he's blindfolded. They push him down with a leg and start unleashing kendo shots on him. At which point we see Raven come out in a horribly fitted white suit and a weird-ass collar. He punishes him for being the one to take the pin. And I like to think, for the worst Luthes press in the history of wrestling, at one point during this match, he goes to the corner, turns around and jumps. Despite the fact it's a small jump, still nearly misses it. Raven says nothing. Johnny Devine doesn't resist. You know, it's the whole serotonin thing of, like, accepting the cult. It's the same shit Raven's been doing, but, like, even worse. You know, it's like Raven's flock when Punk was in it at the start, TNA. I have an important question for you, Michael. Do you remember enjoying serotonin?
No. I don't have a lot of memories of serotonin. I just know that eventually, because I think at some point early next year, the diamonds in the rough all get released in one fell swoop, and I'm convinced that, and I think I'm remembering correctly, serotonin basically take that role on as basically the jobber faction around and just do nothing but lose for months and months on end.
Well, let me cheer you up. We will not see Serotonin wrestle again on this journey until September 2007 in the Tag Team Gauntlet. That is their last match. And then, as for Raven, the next time we will see at least him wrestle, or at least him booked on a pay-per-view, is August 2007 against Kaz after Serotonin split up. Because we're not doing week to week and they never got booked on pay-per-views, we're completely missing serotonin.
Isn't great. It great? That's sometimes there is a benefit of doing it this way. Sometimes, you know what, we're gonna miss some big debuts and we're gonna miss some of that stuff, and that sucks. But also we miss shit like that. So is it really that bad? No, it's not. I think, and so which means this is also, I think, the last Matt Bentley appearance on pay-per-view.
Last time we will ever see Matt again, he does pay-per-view pre-shows and dark matches until July 2007, and then he is gone forever.
Gone forever. Except for one TNA one-night only taping.
Yeah.
In 2013, and that's it. That is it. So, bye, Matt. We still have no idea what's happened to you, but I guess we hope you're well.
Yeah, I hope your Bentley bounce matting somewhere rather than weird serotonin mat. But yeah, I've started looking at the people I knew. We're sort of starting to wrap up and worked out how long we've got left. With Matt, we've got none. And I was like, well, what does that mean for serotonin? Had a look. Yeah, so at Turning Point next month, they're on the pre-show, against Lance Hoyt, Ron Killings, and someone else. They lose. Then they're on dark matches pretty much for the rest of it, and on Impact. So thank fuck we don't have to see that shit again, and we've only got one Raven match still in us, so that's nice.
Yay!
Yay. So after our initial contest, Tanae and Wes hype the three title matches, tell us about the show, and then we go to Jeremy Borash with a new look Naturals and Shane Douglas. They tell us that they beat Team 3D in a tables match recently on Impact. The first team ever, legitimately, the first team ever to have beaten Team 3D in a tables match.
Except they're not.
Yep, except from Team 3D famously lose most of their table matches.
And, like, also, like, the, for example, at the Rumble in 2000 in Madison Square Garden, where the Hardys very famously beat the Dudleys in a tables match with a swanton off the balcony. No memories of that?
Okay. Didn't happen.
Okay.
But, yeah, this was very confusing immediately because I was like, what? Why are they heel? What? So, I was a bit concerned at how this had happened, because the last time we saw them, they were very sympathetic baby faces.
Yeah.
So I'd written in my little notes, Naturals turned heel ? Left the space and did my research. And I would bother explaining the Naturals heel turn, but we never see them again after today, so I'll explain what happened with that instead.
Oh my god. Oh, is this the last time we see the Naturals?
Yep. So, 1 month after handing Team 3D their first ever tables match lost, inverted commas, the franchise left the Naturals saying the experiment was over. Backstage, the reason for this was...
Hold on, can I guess?
Go for it.
Is it because they weren't good enough?
It's because management had... believed that they had given them countless opportunities to show charisma and they had failed to do so.
that is about right, honestly.
Which is pretty spot on from TNA management. They said that they were satisfied with their in-ring ability, but their inability to show any charisma or personality was too much for TNA. And at first they just stopped using them. But then, like, they kind of fix ties a bit, and then they do a lot of TNA explosion until sort of early 2007, when they were released. They would do a couple non-contract appearances, but as for Retrona, yep, Naturals are gone. So I'm not going to bother explaining the heel turn because it doesn't matter.
It's very inconsequential. But like little, but they essentially. They're heels now, and I mean they pick up a sneaky win over Sonjay Dutt and Jay Lethal, who have Jerry Lynn in the corner. But it's it doesn't matter because the Naturals are gone, and we knew that they were going. And even like you could almost see it like in their eyes, like this is our last chance. But like they still did not capitalize on it at all.
No.
They still relied on Shane Douglas to do all the talking and everything, and they just could not. Do anything, and then I believe the two of them ended up retiring very soon after their release because they just once they let go they couldn't get any other work, so they had to retire.
The thing is, it's a strange one because we've seen them recently in this really good role as a sympathetic babyface team where like Shane Douglas is this slightly over-harsh, but he's only harsh because he actually cares, even though he pretends he doesn't manage it. The problem is he had to do all the talking and they did all their storytelling in-ring, which is fine, but doesn't translate to a massive audience well. The match with Sonjay Dutt and Jay Lethal is, for the most part, really forgettable. Sonjay Dutt does some really good stuff when he gets up to speed. And it was during this match that commentary made me realise that Chris Sabin had turned heel, which was also really jarring and confusing, but I have looked into that and I can explain how that's happened when we get there. But yeah, the Naturals get a sneaky win. It was there. I was just happy to see Jerry Lynn, I'll be honest.
Jerry Lynn seems like he's involved in this, and then we'll see in the next match how much he really does get involved. And it's like, I don't have memories of him having a match in TNA, but like, this is also this grey period where I was kind of keeping an eye on it, but I wasn't like super duper watching it every week or keeping an eye on it every month, that sort of thing. So a Jerry Lynn match could have happened and I missed it. Like, that is legitimately something that could happen.
Because we started in 2005, we missed the sort of period where him, AJ, Daniels were all feuding over the X Division title. You know, where you had all those like really good ladder matches. And I remember the cradle pile driver off a ladder, through a ladder. Great spot. Love Jerry Lynn. Also just seems like a really nice guy. And clearly he is still very forward thinking about wrestling, because I think he's a coach at AEW now. So that's good.
Oh, yeah.
He seems to be doing nice. We go to the back with GB, and they're with LAX. They talk about Petey Williams stopping them from burning the flag. And then Conan cuts a really well-educated disassembly on why America's evil, but they're the heels. Remember, they're the heels. Mm-hmm. They talks about how y'all are so happy to represent a country that sends their soldiers to Iraq to die under false pretenses. We're here to burn your flag. We are the 5150. If Gail Kim or any other gringo tries to get involved, you'll get it even worse. They don't fear Cornette, who's backstage and fuming at them. We don't fear anything anyone can do. You run your country out of fear, but you're scared of us now. Cha-ca-ca. Really good promo. It's just classic 2006 and classic wrestling, to be fair, that this makes them the heel. It's like the Muhammad Hassan stuff, where his thing was basically he was a victim of racism and now he's a terrorist. So yay, let's watch him get beat up by The Undertaker.
It's classic wrestling. It's also classic, like, Southern wrestling. Like, TNA is very Southern wrestling. So, it really does speak to all of that. So, like, Conan makes some real points. Some very, very real points. But because he's talking trash about America, it's because it gets gross.
This is leading to a flag match, isn't it?
Yeah, oh my god. And we'll get to the tag match soon, but like, there are some things in it that really have me scratching my head about that, more so than just like the people who suffered from racism are heels. But we will get to that. But you know, you said odd heel turns. Let's talk about the heel turn of Chris Sabin. What happened there?
Yeah, so commentary put over the fact that during the tag match with Sonji and Lethal, that they've been really, they show the contrast between their relationship with Jerry Lynn and the Naturals with Shane Douglas, where Jerry Lynn's really supportive and nice even when they lose, and he just gives them feedback and he's like a coach and their friend. And then they start talking about the fact that maybe if Chris Sabin wasn't so arrogant and accepted his help, he would still be champion. And that just threw loads of confusion in my work. So I was like, what? He's not champion? What? So let me spit the facts for you. AJ Styles beat Chris Sabin for the title in 4 minutes in a Fight for the Right tournament 2 days after Bound for Glory. So Sabin's reign was 2 days. Styles then lost the belt to Daniels at Impact 125 in a three-way with Sabin. Sabin completed his heel turn 2 weeks later when he refused to help fellow X Division star Sonjay Dutt from an assault from Samoa Joe. Further to that, he then got revenge on AJ for taking his title out of him as AJ and Abyss. So the way the Fight for the Right tournaments worked is it was a reverse battle royal, and then the final two had a match. And the final two for the world title, I think it was, were Abyss and AJ Styles. Styles was setting up for the Styles clash on Abyss, which, like, he was never going to hit anyway, but it doesn't matter, because when the ref was not looking, Saban ran in and decked AJ, allowing Abyss to hit the Black Hole Slam. He's been feuding mostly with Jerry Lynn backstage, which makes it feel like it is building to him versus Jerry Lynn, which is completely different to Raven Larry Zbyszko, because actually I would be all for seeing Jerry Lynn Chris Sabin. I think that'd be great.
Yeah, because Jerry Lynn, like, he's, you know, he would have only, like, retired not that long ago.
Yeah, it would have been 2004.
Yeah, 2004, 2005.
But interestingly to note as well, Styles went outside during the triple, so it was a triple threat between Daniel Styles and Saban. Styles got distracted by Christian and went out to brawl with him. So Daniels pinned Saban then to win the title as well. So Saban, since winning the title, has not been having great luck. Which I guess is to show that he's been getting over cocky and, like, show that Jerry Lynn's in the right to establish the, like, heel-face dynamic. But, yeah, Chris Sabin's now a cocky heel. Who would have thought it?
Yeah, and, like, in this match with Christopher Daniels, like, it's very good. I really enjoyed the match. I'm really enjoying the break that we're getting from Senshi. It's really nice. But no, this is really good. I did quite enjoy this. You know, Christopher Daniels gets the win and everything. It was just like, it was a good match. You know, you could go through the spots, but it's just like, it's a good X Division match. And Christopher Daniels wins, but it's after the match where, like, Chris Sabin is about to attack and then Jerry Lynn stops him and then tells Saban to shake his hand. He shakes his hand and then hits a cradle shock when Jerry Lynn has his back turned and he's walking back. And Chris Sabin has learned nothing from his loss and overconfidence in that. And he's still a smarmy dick. Which, you know, I believe that. I see that story and, like, I believe Chris... I'm sure Chris Sabin's a lovely person. I'm saying that in the same way that I think Austin Aries is a cunt. But... Chris Sabin, he plays the arrogant young guy pretty damn well. So I thought this was good. Like, albeit I didn't expect it this soon to go from he finally won the X Division title again to he's an arrogant heel who can't win again. It was a quick change over the last few weeks, but it's solid. It's character development.
Yeah, it's an interesting twist. I also don't remember Saban being heel after this, so this might be a one and done thing or something that we're forgetting about. But yeah, like you said, match itself has loads of really nice moments. Important story thing to note, at one point Saban has Daniels tried up in the Tree of Woe and goes and gets a chair to go and do like a hesitation dropkick with the chair, and Styles comes in and takes the chair off him to save his buddy, his friend. That will come into play shortly. But yeah, I just clicked that, you know how Daniel does the Uranage into the BME?
Yeah.
Do you think that's who now cancelled possible sex offender Jordan Devlin stole the Uranage and moonsault from? I think Devlin's a big TNA mark.
I feel like Devlin probably watched TNA back in the day. Like, Devlin in 2006 would have been, like, what, 15, 16 at the time? So, yeah.
Nothing on. I could send him a DM. I might get cancelled for doing it, but we'd find out.
He's still employed by WWE as of right now. I would imagine. I would imagine. I'm sure that's where he probably took some inspiration from. The same way that Michelle McCool took some inspiration from TNA when she did the Angel's Wings and the Styles Clash for a few years in WWE.
It's so weird how many people have, like, nibbled in from TNA across wrestling.
Totally.
It's like now that people steal from New Japan, you know, it's like that. We are backstage with our favorite X Division wrestler Kevin Nash, along with Alex Shelley and Austin Starr.
Austin Starr,
whose gimmick seems to be a parody of homosexual males in Hollywood. It looks like it should be offensive, but there's nothing explicitly homoerotic about his character.
No.
Other than some of his mannerisms and the fact it's TNA and Austin Aries, you know, just makes it possible.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not exactly willing to give them the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah. They start saying they need to get a win. They're on the same page. They will be huge stars like Lasertron, George South. They need to win at all costs like Bo Derek. The match itself is Lance Hoyt and Ron Killings, who we saw start teaming recently. Obviously against Austin Starr and Alex Shelley. The highlight of this is Kevin Nash on commentary.
Yep.
As it seems to be week to week, he's got a sling on. They ask him how it happens. He says he was hurt in Japan at the Bukkudon, defending his international X title, and he hurt it on a 3750 black Hurricane Rana leap, but he finished the match and won.
Finished the match victorious.
It's incredible. Throughout, he's just saying that he taught them stuff, or he was like, at one point, Star goes up top and does a double axe handle. He's like, I would have done a triple rotation flip there. It's really nice, self-aware comedy. Not much happens in the match. The only thing I really noted was Ron Killings does a really nice, like, spinning flapjack jawbreaker.
Mm-hmm.
Like going into the one percenter that EC3 would do, but dropping it into like a stunner, and it got sold really well by Star or Shelley, I can't remember which. The finish comes when they team up on Lance Hoyt, but rather than going for the pin, Shelley, who has been filming Star get the wins week to week, makes Star go and get the camera to film him getting the pin, but it takes a bit too long and Hoyt wins via roll-up. That's right. The 7-foot wrestler beats the very small wrestler via roll-up. I've not got that the wrong way around. Kevin Nash is pissed off, but they've already announced that on Thursday he will be having an address of the X Division, which I'm hoping means we're about to get into the Good Shark Boy and Curry Man and fucking... what's his name?
Super Eric?
Black Machismo.
Black Machismo, yeah.
Well, I was about to mention Eric. No Eric Young here. At all.
Yeah, no Eric Young on this show. But, oh well. He's been prominent for the last... For most of the year. So, it's alright. Give him a little bit of a rest. Not terrible. He may be injured and we just don't realise it. But yeah. I have nothing to say about the match itself. It's Kevin Nash on commentary. That's the star. He's so in over his head. He believes his own hype. He's really good at it. It's self-aware. Like you said, self-aware comedy. It's really well done. So this story, like the Kevin Nash X Division versus the X Division story, is so good on a second watch. It really is.
Yeah. It makes sense. It's the most bored I've been watching Alex Shelley. That's kind of what we're looking
yeah.
at.
Yeah, that's a shame. But like, also like, you have Lance Hoyt in the ring, who's not great.
God.
And so
the last time we had Lance Hoyt, we were talking about how interesting it'll be to see how he does in AEW. Then Cody Rhodes beat him, and I don't know what he's doing there.
Who cares? Really?
Exactly. but they won in the demo and won in the ratings. Another win for the good guy. We get a Christian Cage promo package with JB. Christian has never made mistakes. Mistakes are for losers, which I am in. He says he hasn't overlooked AJ. AJ's overlooked him. He takes care of business. They're building the fact that Christian is undefeated. And same way Samoa Joe is. He's lost matches, but he's never been the one pinned or submitted or, like, directly caused the match to end. JB rolls his eyes. Christian Cage threatens to beat him up. Gets back on it. He'll beat Jeff Jarrett. He's beaten Jeff Jarrett. He's beaten Abyss. He beat Rhino in his hometown. AJ will just become one of the many. He's the biggest star in TNA in the industry. He has a new catchphrase that I can't remember. It's not very good, but it's better than... In fact,
that's
I'm not
how
sure
I roll.
Yeah, like, it's like, and that's just a matter of fact or something stupid like that. It's not great. It made me not look forward to the match between him and AJ, which is bad for a promo segment.
True. But thankfully the match is very good because it's
yes.
Christian and AJ Styles and they're still going great guns at this point in 2006, which is awesome. It's a really good match. It's the longest match on the show, and that's fine. I guess the biggest story point at the end is when Christopher Daniels comes out, essentially to repay the favor when Christian's about to use the chair. He tries to grab the chair away from him. He turns into a little tug of war. And while he's got Christian like that, AJ goes for a sunset flip kind of roll up kind of thing. But Christian just sits down and turns it into a pin of his own and wins that way. So Christopher Daniels kind of inadvertently costing AJ the match, even though he, as they say on commentary, Christopher Daniels did the right thing and did all the right things. So it's all just like, yeah, Christian just like managed to work it out for himself. So crafty heel doing crafty things. And then they start doing the AJ and Christopher Daniels, like they've got tension, and Rhino comes out and tells them like, don't do this, that sort of thing. The AJ and Christopher Daniels tag team seems like it's run its course now. They're kind of done and they're ready to go separate ways at this point.
It obviously we've been saying for a while that we know that the Christian Coalition's coming up.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see how closely it comes after AJ and Christian were feuding. So, I guess Daniels is going to be the victim in Styles' heel turn. And we'll get Big Tomko, which I'm excited for. Which I think leads to the Christian Coalition versus Sting's Warriors or something like that. Which yeah. I think features AJ Styles doing something mental on top of the cage. It always does. But yeah, the match was really good. Like, probably the second best match of the night. The main event is in a league of its own. But just lots of really good stuff, and probably Christian's best match in TNA so far.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, really, by far.
My favourite spot, just to name one rather than go through them all. Christian does, like, the slingshot to AJ to put him into the turnbuckle, but AJ lands, turns, moonsaults into the inverted DDT. So slick. It could have been ever so slightly smoother, but they sold the fact that AJ's leg had been damaged, which I really liked. Could have done without Rhino's involvement afterwards. I liked the Daniel stuff, and I liked the fact that X Division came to make sure that their two figureheads didn't fight. But Rhino can fuck up.
At least we didn't have to have a Rhino match on the show, so there's that.
True. I was about to say we didn't really have the brawly into the crowd match, but yeah, we did.
Oh yeah, we do. That's a contractual obligation in.
Yep.
I'm 100% sure.
So we go back to Bo Rash. He's getting double time this week. he's with America's Most Wanted and Gail Kim. He said Harris is the main... We kind of get two promos that cover each other, but Harris goes first, and he talks about them being laid out with a Mexican flag on them and border tossing Gail Kim, but they're still standing tougher than they thought. We've never been America's most loved. We've always been America's most wanted. You don't... It's very racially charged. Some might say edging on racist. I would be inclined to agree. Talks about... it gets racist when James Storm talks.
Yes. Yes, it does. It gets very racist and, like, does an Asian-like accent with Gail Kim right there.
Well, this
but
is...
But anyway.
So he goes... it doesn't matter if you say it in English, Spanish, Portuguese, French, Chinese, Korean, Ching Chang Chuang, Wan Ching Chang, and Gail Kim looks really uncomfortable.
Yeah, I bet knowing Gail Kim and her politics and stuff today, and how outspoken she is on Twitter and that sort of stuff, I have a feeling she probably is not a fan of this promo.
Especially because he then goes, and then you can put the fire out that you started, because that's all you guys are good for. Cleaning swimming pools and cleaning cars, so get out of the ring and kill my garage and clean my garage and
so racist.
Yeah, it's not great. Wait, I have a bit of my notes called AMW update. We have a match. They have a match on the next pay per view.
Yeah,
and then they have another match. So they've got a match on the next pay-per-view against LAX. I'm going to put my money out there and say a flag match. and then following that, we have title versus team, where if AMW lose, they have to split up, and Storm deliberately bottles Harris so they lose and split up. So right. We've got one more AMW match, which I'm kind of happy about. I feel like they were getting a bit stale here. And also it means we're nearly at the locked in blindfold match, which I'm excited for.
We're so getting there.
The match itself, it's a step down from LAX versus Daniels and Styles.
It's gonna be hard to be on par or even a step up from what that was, because it was really, really good. But yeah, this match, yeah, it's fine. Like, America's Most Wanted just aren't that tag team that will be able to hang with that. So it's good. There's shenanigans, there's involvement from Gail and Conan and everything, and there's like the end came with like a blowtorch to the head, because sure, why not? So through shenanigans and cheating, LAX win, fine, that's cool. But then after the match, yeah, this is where the main talking point is. So they say, like, that Jim Cornette comes down. It looks like they're about to attack Gail Kim again. And then Petey Williams comes for the save. And then,
Famous American,
Petey Williams, who was not just part of Team Canada a few months ago. Then Jim Cornette comes down and says, you keep threatening to burn the American flag and all that sort of stuff. Well, everyone TNA's had it, the fans have had it. You, as of right now, you're stripped of the tag team championships. And you have until this Thursday on Impact to deliver them back. And then, like, it's supposed to be like the heels get their comeuppance kind of thing. It didn't actually work, because the crowd,
what Conan says,
yeah, because the crowd turns on it, and then like that they don't want LA, like they don't like they'll play along and they'll boo LAX, but also they don't want them stripped of the tag titles without actually losing it, so the crowd turns against it, doesn't get the reaction that they were probably looking for, and then they hoist Petey Williams up, and Petey Williams holds up the American flag.
Yeah.
What?
Like,
Gail Kim's Canadian too, so
I was gonna say, the thing is, Gail Kim is also Canadian.
Yeah.
James Storm's a redneck, so that makes sense, but what's interesting is, one, it just reaffirms all of what Conan's saying about, oh, you're not patriotic, you're racist. But also, I really wanted to see Gail Kim take that vertebraker.
It was getting there. I was like, oh, God. I can't remember if she takes it or not. I feel like I would have seen it if she has. But, yeah, so that was a very good tease. Very good tease.
This is a very Russo segment.
And
I think a lot of the issue as well is, one, I've got a brain. But, two, I'm not American. So I have no reason to care about them burning the American flag. I'm like, have you seen the protests that happens every week now? Tearing down statues. Like, we've gone a little bit past flag burning. James Mitchell's here. Says Sting was a wrestling icon. He was in the darkness, the vices. That never left Sting. You battle every day. You are what you're afraid of. You know Abyss will defeat you, and Abyss represents your inner darkness. He will open up those feelings and question all your belief. In your defeat, you will gain knowledge and freedom. Lovely James Mitchell, well-spoken, Raven-esque, but enjoyable, like, hype package interview. Doomsday and all that jazz.
He just speaks very, very well. So James Mitchell is a delight to listen to. Even if, like, it feels hokey and feels cartoony, but, like, I do enjoy it. Like, that's the kind of stuff I can suspend my disbelief with for a little bit with wrestling.
Like, it just feels fun. Like, it's a bit like Killer Cross. Just so I can mention Killer Cross on another podcast. But, like, it's like a slightly more caricatured version of Cross, which is nice. It works for the time. It works for, you know, bear in mind, like, this is meant to replicate the success of Bearer and Undertaker, and, you know, Undertaker was, like, campy. So, but yeah, Sting versus Abyss. It's the Brawl into the Crowd match.
Yay, there it is. We knew that was coming. It felt weird that they hadn't done it up to this point, but I guess we're finally waiting for it. And then this match took a turn. Few things. Credit for Sting at his age taking a thumbtack bump. That's that was legitimately impressive. It goes fully hardcore very quickly, including hoisting Abyss upside down and whacking him with a chair like a piñata, and, like, still no disqualification. But then after all of that, thumbtacks, chairs, and all that sort of stuff, after they fight up to the stage and Sting hits the referee, and that's the disqualification, and then Abyss goes crashing down into barbed wire and shit. And then they announce that Sting's finally been disqualified, and a forgotten rule of the NWA World Championship is that the title changes hands on a disqualification. So through all of that, Abyss has become the NWA champion. Not through dominance, not through being a monster, through technicality.
That's not my connection breaking up. It was so, so fucking confusing. Like, we're in Russo territory now. Like, like we know at this point that this is Russo.
Yeah.
The bell rang. We have a DQ. The crowd goes mild. The usual DQ rule. It doesn't. Like, I get, oh, cool, they used an old rule. How many days is this title reign lasting?
It would have been, like, what, 21 days or something? Probably, like, yeah, like...
I mean Abysses.
Like, oh, Abysses. Oh, I think he keeps it for at least a month or two.
See, I just assumed that it was going to turn round on the next episode Impact, and they'd be like... Yeah, that's not how we do things here.
Nah, it's I'm very confident he holds it for at least a pay-per-view.
So, that's something.
Something. It's a choice to have Abyss, the dominant monster, to be the we'll have Abyss win the title finally, but on a technicality. And so forth. He didn't actually win it. He just kind of, like, Sting lost it. But, like, Abyss won it by accident kind of thing. But then it turns out, and we find out, you know, history now, that this is Abyss's only NWA, like, World Championship run. And he wins it like this.
And they've got, like, an X-Division title reign to come. That's about it. We've got the Hall of Fame ring. You know, that's something.
I yes.
Do you think this was There's a couple options with this. Sting didn't want to lose clean to Abyss. Or drop the title clean to Abyss. Vince Russo wanted a swerve for the sake of a swerve. Mm-hmm. Highly possible.
Yeah.
This title reign was to reward him for not going and doing the Undertaker match. That's kind of the options.
I think number two was the most likely. Number three, a close second, maybe. but yeah, I don't think it's a matter of like Sting not wanting to put Abyss over. I don't think that's probably the least likely of the cases that you just mentioned. But I feel like, yeah, rewarding Abyss for not leaving it. And also, but definitely Vince Russo, just Vince Russoing everywhere is probably the most likely candidate here.
Yeah, 100%. But it's time for our main event. The last match of Genesis. The very humbly advertised by TNA as the dream match of the decade. it's Senior Joe, Samoa Joe versus the Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle. No titles. The only thing on the line here is Samoa Joe's undefeated streak and pride. It's there's no way to beat around it. It's incredible. It delivered what it needed to. This was hype. This is the reason people were tuning in to watch Genesis, and it's exactly what I remember. The match I remember more about this is the one where they're in, like, MMA gear, I think. It's a lockdown?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. We get a few more Angle and Joe matches in the future.
I'm pretty sure at main events next month as well. I think we get an Iron Man match, so that's going to take some time. Everyone loves an Iron Man match. But, the match is really sick. Technical wrestling, really good brawling. Kurt Angle is still Kurt Angle here, and Samoa Joe is probably at his peak, is probably fair to say. Most notably, Joe taps.
Yes.
Match goes 30 minutes. Joe taps. A year and a half. The undefeated streak is over. Samoa Joe has been humbled by Angle, and it immediately, like, not that you really needed to legitimize Angle, but if you're going to feed that undefeated streak to anyone, it made sense to give it to Angle, because it builds into a natural story of Joe trying to best Angle, which we retrospectively know we're going to get.
The match 100% delivered. It was worth the hype that they did hype it up to be. It was only 13 minutes long. It wasn't that long at all, but like it felt epic. So like, and it just goes to show you again, you can have a really, really good main event, a really good hyped main event, and it not overstay its welcome. So that's what TNA, I think, probably does. A thing that TNA does really well that people don't talk about a lot is the fact that their main events, when they hype it like this one, they don't overstay their welcome, and they do them quite well. So Kurt Angle is worth every penny that they are paying him for this. I like seeing Kurt Angle move, like being able to move, and Joe not being sad WWE Joe. It just shows like these two in 2000 and end of 2006, start of 2007, they were on top of their game, and it was just a really, really good wrestling match, a really good main event, by far, far and away the best main event of a pay-per-view that we've seen. Top way to finish it, top way to finish the show. And then after the match, when Joe finally taps, which I don't think hurts Joe at all. He tells Angle to get back into the ring and say, let's have a rematch. And Kurt Angle refuses to shake his hand. Story. Oh, I like it. I like it a lot. I was really happy with this main event.
Yeah, and the build to it since Angle came in, obviously we've missed the most of it because of it being on TV. But the stuff they show in the highlight packages, I really like the intensity of like the power of it, the ferocity, and yeah, I know we get it again, and then I think we get it at Lethal Lockdown, or at some point there's like a legit MMA match between yeah. them that's really good, and then I think they both end up in the main event Mafia at some point, so you know.
Yeah, that's I think that's like a year or two away. Yeah.
Because we've got to get Booker T in first before that. But yeah. Overall, the good on this show is really good.
Yeah.
But the bad is particularly bad.
Yeah. Like, the Voodoo-kun Mafia is awful and horrendous. The Naturals do not care. They are gone anyway. The Lance Hoyt Ron Killings versus the Paparazzi match didn't really do anything. It was Kevin Nash on commentary. That was the thing. Very odd booking in the Abyss Sting match. Fine enough match with LAX and America's Most Wanted, but it's really Kurt Angle and Joe, Christian and AJ, and Christopher Daniels and Chris Sabin that are like the high points of the show. And because they are quite good, I'm more inclined to give this show a thumbs up overall, because I think they pace the show okay.
Yeah. The bad stuff is short for the most part. That's the best part of it. But yeah, maybe like sort of like a 7 out of 10. Like the bad on it drags it down, but like the main event is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
But we've got one more pay-per-view this year. We got Turning Point, and then that is the first full year of Retrona done. 12 pay-per-views, 12 months. A lot of the James Gang.
So much James Gang. And so much to go. And so much to go. We're getting there. I think we're approaching what is perceived to be TNA's peak. Some would argue this may be it, or next month or something like that, but we are around that point where it's perceived to be TNA's like pitch perfect moment.
Yeah, exactly. Like we are, TNA's dark period isn't really until the sort of, I was going to say the Robbie E period, which makes it sound like I'm blaming Robbie E. It just happens to be the period, the time he's there, like the Drew McIntyre period as well.
That's really like, dark. It's around the 2011 period where it's like, this is getting dumb at this point. Because throughout like 2008 and 2009, you think like, oh, like they're an alternative, and they're doing good things. They're hanging around, but it all starts to come undone, I think, properly around 2011.
Yeah, exactly. But we've got a couple more years before we get there, so make sure to follow us on whatever podcast app you use, and then that way you get updated every time we upload a new episode, which at the moment is every Tuesday evening. I guess this was the arrival of Kurt Angle, but best one that we'll go Kurt.
Yeah, I can't remember who we got played out. I think did Sting play us out last for?
Yeah, because he won the title.
Yeah, so I think Kurt Angle's weird like rap theme is probably gonna play us out, because he had a hell of a match and won the main event. Abyss, if you retain next month, you can have your song played again, all right? Win next month.
I'm fairly sure, just sort of thinking about it, I think he loses it to heel Christian and the Coalition, which isn't till next year. So I think he either doesn't defend it next month, which would be very TNA. he just beats Sting clean, maybe?
Maybe? I'm not sure. We're gonna have to wait and see. is the way to take that. But I do hope Abyss at least gets one retention under his belt. Hopefully. That would be nice for him. If he didn't win it properly, yeah. he could at least retain it, right?
It's such TNA love a dodgy finish for the titles. I'm thinking like AMW against Team 3D and now this. Like, it's strange, you know?
Very strange. Very strange. But also Russo, so it kind of like explains itself.
Yeah. It is also funny that we're talking about someone winning the title without getting a pin or submission. Like, the day after Sasha Banks wins the title via countout.
Yeah, yeah. But I guess that was explicitly stated before the match that, like, it's gonna, like, the match will change hands on pinfall, submission, countout, disqualification.
It wasn't through some weird rule.
No, but at least it was explicitly stated, not like true. After the fact. It was like, oh yeah, by the way, did you realize that the NWA title actually changes hands on disqualification? Bet you didn't realize that, ha ha ha. Take that, historians.
Oh my god, I just found it. So I was just doing a quick bit of reading. Do you know what TNA's 2005 match of the year was?
I mean, it should have been Joe Daniels and Styles in that triple threat that actually legitimately got 5 stars, but what was it actually?
Nah, it was the barbed wire massacre match between Abyss and Sabu.
Nah, of course it was. Yeah, yeah, sure, right.
That dreadful fucking match. The match of the year for 2006, which include this year, feud of the year, Samoa Joe and Kurt Angle. Feud of the year, last 2 months. Match of the year, Ultimate X match, AJ Styles and Daniels versus LAX.
I could pay that.
Much more suitable winner.
I could pay that, yeah.
X Division Star of the Year, Samoa Joe. Mr. TNA, Samoa Joe.
That's fine. Yeah. I can understand that.
Tag Team of the Year for 2006 was not a thing until... it was AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels.
Yep. That's fair too.
Knockout of the Year
was Christy Hemme.
The only one, yep.
She hasn't been on pay-per-view all year, but that's fine.
Finisher of the Year for the
Canadian Destroyer.
Third year, yeah, Canadian Destroyer.
Has to be.
Who to watch in 2007?
Describing
Kurt Angle.
It's the who to watch.
One to watch. most inspirational wrestler of the year?
Oh, Eric Young?
Eric Young.
Interestingly,
I happen to see there that Motor City Machine Guns win 2007 Tag Team of the Year.
Oh, they're so around the corner.
It's good to know that they're around the corner.
Oh, I love seeing the year-end awards at the as we reach the end of the year. That kind of makes sense. Some of those awards do make sense, so like they're not completely wrong.
Exactly. With that being said, I guess it's time to wrap up so I can order food and then go to sleep.
Yay.
Michael, would you like to do your plugs?
At Michael Farah on Instagram, at Michael Farah 92 on Twitter. That's where you can catch me. Liam, where can they find you and the pod?
You can follow me at Liam A. Stewart on Twitter, at Liam ALX Stewart on Instagram. You can follow the brand at Develop Podcast. Make sure to like interact with us on Twitter. We're funny sometimes.
We're a friendly bunch.
That being said, thank you very much for listening. I've been Liam Stewart. He's been Michael Farah. This has been the Developmental Podcast. And this has got Angle shaking.